Vaydaber Adonai Elmo Shelemor Tzav Es Aharon V'es Banav Lemor Zos Toras Ha'ola Hi Ha'ola Al Mokida Al HaMizbeach Kol HaLaila Ad HaBoker V'yesh HaMizbeach Tukad Bo. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, command Aharon and his sons, saying, this is the law of the elevation offering. It is the elevation offering that stays on the flame on the altar all night until the morning, and the fire of the altar should be kept aflame on it. Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is officially for Parshat Tzav, but it's really for Purim. What you hear in the background, I hope, is Purim music, which I'm playing, and I decided to leave it on throughout. At the moment, the player and speaker is facing away from me as I talk, and when I want to put a gap in my talking, I will bring the speaker right up to the microphone, which is on my headphones, and the music will come up. For example, now. Okay, so we'll let that play, and just goes to the next track, I took four different albums I had on Purim music, put them all together, and they're on a disc on key, which people in other countries in English call it a flash drive or a USB drive. Here they call it, in Hebrew, a disc on key. Go figure. That's the story. So, let's make this official. Recording, and I don't know when first broadcast will be, the recording is starting on the eve of the 14th of Adar, Bet, Adar Sheni, 5776, what to the whole world and all of Israel is Leil Purim, Purim Eve, but we in Yerushalayim celebrate Purim tomorrow night and Friday. And tonight is sort of a strange interlude between the day, which was Ta'anit Esther, the fast of Esther, and tomorrow night when we hear Megillah. As I am recording these words, I look at my watch, and I would say that most people in Israel are still in shul or just finishing with Ma'ariv and Megillah reading, and whatever the shul has scheduled, refreshments or program after, they're heavily going to be into that in a few minutes. When you're listening to this, I have no idea when it will be. It definitely will not be on Ta'anit Esther. I don't think so. And it might be on the world's Purim, known here as regular Purim or Purim Diprazim, open-cityed Purim. Here in Israel, in Yerushalayim, we observe Purim de Mukafin, the walled city Purim, and it ironically is the only city that universally observes the 15th of Adar and not the 14th. There are many cities that observe the 14th and then go through Megillah reading and all of the other mitzvot of the day again on the 15th. Because they are question mark cities as to whether they were walled or near walled cities in the time of Yehoshua bin Nun. The whole idea of splitting Purim, of course, comes from the Megillah, and it comes in the form of the Jews fought for their lives against their enemies on the 13th of Adar, and they rested from their battle on the 14th, hence the observance of the 14th of Adar as Purim. The Jews in Shushan were given an extra day to fight against their enemies. This was at the offer of Ahasuerus, who said to Esther, the queen, whatever you want, ask and it shall be done. And she asked for the Jews in Shushan, who were the ones who acutely suffered the threat of Haman and his hordes, to have an extra day of fighting, and they fought on the 14th and rested on the 15th. Therefore, there are two different days of celebration of Purim. The way it evolved is that walled cities from the time of Yehoshua, why from the time of Yehoshua? Why not from the Shushan story? The answer to that is that Jerusalem was in ruin during the time of the Shushan story, the Purim story, and it would not be nice, I don't know if a better word, for Jerusalem to be excluded just because it was it had been destroyed. So Chazal, our sages, dated the guideline for when there's a walled city from the time of Yehoshua. It's not unconnected because Yehoshua was the ancestor of Mordechai. He was from the tribe of Ephraim. Mordechai was a Benjaminite. Ephraim came from Yosef. Yosef and Binyamin came from Rachel. And Rachel, Mother Rachel, was the one designated that her descendants would be successful in their battles against Amalek because of her nature, as opposed to the nature of the sons of Leah, who did not make, perfect antagonists of Amalek. I don't know if that explains it, and I don't know if I can explain it any better. Bottom line, Jerusalem today is the city that observes the 15th of Adar and not the 14th of Adar. We don't say Tachanun, we didn't say Avinu Malkeinu at Mincha today of the fast day because of the approaching Purim. Even if it wasn't our Purim, it's still referred to in Megillah as Yemei HaPurim HaEleh. And that's pretty much the story. Now, I decided today, this week, we accelerated the printing of Torah Tidbits. Instead of working on it Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday and have it delivered Wednesday morning for distribution and hang over to Thursday, we knocked it off on Sunday and Monday. Tuesday morning, Tuesday noontime, we got the delivery and started distribution yesterday, Tuesday, and today, the 23rd of March, Wednesday, Ta'anit Esther, because there are people from out of town who can't make the proper arrangements to pick up their Torah Tidbits when it's their Purim, and because of the preparation for our Purim, which will take place tomorrow in the afternoon especially. So that's the story. So I'm decided that I'm recording the first half of the show at least tonight. I have now Israel time, 7:45 in the evening. By the way, we change our clock here in Israel to summertime tomorrow night. It was very, very weird. Israel had gone to many different formulas and dates for daylight savings time and fairly recently standardized as going to daylight savings time on the early Friday morning before April, and technically that's this Friday, the 25th, because next Friday is already April 1st. So we change the clock then, and we go back, I think, the last Sunday morning in October. It used to be more coordinated with the Pesach Seder and with fasting on Yom Kippur. That went out the window, and it's standardized to those two secular dates. But ironically, or strangely, it fell out this year that the rest of the country celebrates Purim in wintertime. We hear Megillah tomorrow night in wintertime. And in the middle of the night, early morning, we switch an hour ahead so that Friday morning, a 7 o'clock minyan is really 6 o'clock on your body time. We're davening here at the Israel Center at 8 in the morning. And Shabbos now will be an hour later than it's been. But still, there's a lot to be done, and it's a sort of a crowded agenda on Friday, as I will describe in a couple of minutes. Let's go back to the music. Okay, I don't really know how this is going to come out fading-wise. I'm doing it physically, as I said, by distancing myself from the speaker and pointing it in the other direction. And I hope this is not too annoying to hear constantly in the background, but I wanted it to have the Purim mood. I had toyed with the idea of recording at least half the show on Tanit Esther itself, but it didn't work out that way. So now, as I said, it's Leil Purim for the rest of the world and the rest of Israel, and not yet Purim for Yerushalayim. Okay, what can I say? Corresponds my recording now to March 23rd, Purim 24th at night and the 25th during the day, and Shabbat is Parshat Tzav. What we should do is say Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph, Psalm 121, which we do when we don't say Tachanun, like now. Shir Lama'alot, Shir Lama'alot, Esa Einai El Heharim, Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai, Osei Shomayim Va'aretz. Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha, Al Yanum Shomerecha. Hine lo yanum velo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha al yad yaminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka v'yareach balayla. Adonai yishmarcha mikol ra yishmoret nafshecha. Adonai yishmoret seitecha uvoecha me'ata v'ad olam. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya, haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha, umeyafela leora, umishibud legeula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. Okay, whether it's Purim or not for you who are listening, I just want to make a couple of comments. Number one, the original Purim decree, back from the time of the Purim story, the year after and onward, was daytime observances only. The reading of Megillah was in the morning of the day of Purim, whichever the day may be. Same thing with Su'udat Purim, Matanot Lev Yonim, gifts to the poor, and Mishloach Manot Ish L'Re'ehu, the exchange and giving of gifts of food items to your fellow. The evening was just the evening of Purim, did not have any of the observances of the day. Somewhere along the line, the sages decided that Megillah should be read at nighttime also. They did not impose or require the other mitzvot of the day, giving of gifts to the poor and gifts to your fellows, and the festive meal. They left that in the daytime, but Megillah became night and day. I say this because there's a certain perception, especially I remember this from the United States, to some extent here in Israel also, there's a perception that the nighttime Megillah reading is the more important of the two, where many, many people, women and others probably, will be very careful to go to Megillah reading at nighttime and kind of not that meticulous about reading, hearing in the daytime because they're busy with other things or whatever. The fact of the matter is the reading of the daytime Megillah has a higher level of obligation than the nighttime. I am not recommending that anyone skip Megillah at night, but you need to hear it both times. Now, one little manifestation of this idea comes from the fact that at nighttime when we read Megillah, the Baal Koreh, the one who reads the Megillah for the congregation, recites three brachot, three blessings. The first one is the mitzvah bracha, al mikra Megillah. The second one, which we know from Chanukah, is Sha'asa Nisim Lavotenu Bayamim Ha'im Bazman Hazeh, because Purim as well as Chanukah have the strong accent on publicizing miracles. I would say with Purim even more so, because Chanukah is more obvious. It is with Purim that we're dealing with a situation of Hester Panim, God hiding his face, acting behind the scenes. You can read the Megillah story without acknowledging God's role in it. In fact, the Megillah goes through its story without ever once mentioning God's name. But he is there, and it's very important that we perceive God not just with open, obvious miracles, but with totally explainable natural phenomena that are nonetheless miraculous in a quiet, subtle, hidden way. One thing I like reminding people that from the time that Esther was taken to the king in his beauty contest, as it's called, until Haman hatched his plot and revealed his intentions, and Esther went into action to thwart it, was 5 years. For 5 years, every single day, Esther and Mordechai probably wondered what in the world are they doing where they are. Why was Esther allowed to be taken by the king? Nothing seems to have justified that for 5 long years. Finally, when Mordechai tells Esther to go see the king, his argument is, Umi odea, who knows? Im lo'et kazot higa'at lamalchut. Maybe this is why you're here. I don't even know. But maybe this is why you're here. And that's why she was there. And the rest of the story unfolds. But there is a tremendous amount of hidden, behind the scenes, God's not being mentioned in the Megillah. The story reads as a story. And then when you read it through our glasses, we infuse it with miraculous event, heaven's help, God's hand working behind the scenes. And again, it's a matter of perception. It's a matter of belief and trust that this is what we're talking about. For example, Achashverosh makes a party, many parties, and he calls for his queen Vashti to appear before him. Now, there was a political issue here that Achashverosh usurped the kingship, which belonged to Vashti's father. which is why Vashti was his queen. So from Vashti's perspective, she was the one who was royalty, and he was the usurper. Here at this party, he orders her to appear before him, and she refuses. He's drunk, and his request is not modest, to say the least, and there are all kind of discussions and sources about that. What followed was basically the advice of Haman that the king has to do something to Vashti, and we assume that it was off-with-her-head type, in order to make it clear to all the women in the kingdom that a wife does not refuse to appear before her husband when he so orders. Whether you like that or not, that was the style of the time. So the king gets rid of his queen upon the advice of his friend. Towards the end of the story, the king gets rid of his friend at the advice of his queen. Now that's irony. It makes perfect story literature. But from our perspective, we see the hand of God in all of this. And that's why each of the events that happened in the Megillah happened exactly when and what and why. There's a lot to be said on that, which we're not going to go to in maybe one or two other examples. But that's it. What I'm trying to say, basically, is that scoffers can see this as a piece of fiction when traditional Judaism says it is absolutely true. These events occurred. This is the record of these events. And we see the hand of God suffused throughout. We'll be right back with more Torah Tibbetz audio for Purim and Parshat Tzav. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for, I guess, Purim. I'll say Parshat Tzav because I do want to talk about that in a while. But it's really for Purim. And whether it's actually Purim by you or Friday Shushan Purim by us in Yerushalayim or beginning of next week, Purim will have been so recent that I hope some of these ideas will resonate with you. I wanted to pick up on a thread that I started, and that is the hand of God seen behind the scenes if you want to see it. Interesting controversy here in Israel, maybe other places also, with one of the Hanukkah songs, which speaks of Mi Amalel Givurot Hashem. No, what does it go? One version of the song compliments the Maccabees, the Hashmonaim, and one compliments God for the miracles, as if those were two different things that were opposite each other, which they are not. When we say Mordechai and Esther, there was a partnership. The partnership was God, Mordechai, and Esther. And I'm not saying whether we're talking about a 50-50 partnership or a 60-40 or whatever, but there definitely is a partnership in any of the things that we live through. If you go back to Amalek, the ancestor of Haman, you find different statements in the Torah. One, God says Emche, I will wipe out their memory. The other pasuk says, you, Timche, shall wipe out the remnant of Amalek. There is a partnership between God and Israel in its battles. If, God forbid, he sits on his hands, so to speak, and lets us fight on our own, it's not going to come out good. We need the partnership between God and the people of Israel. We can't leave it just up to God. Ein sumchim al hanes. We do not rely on miracles. We hope for miracles. We pray for miracles. We rejoice in miracles. But we can't rely on them. We have to do our share. And if you think this is only once upon a time, a long time ago, with Purim or with Hanukkah, it goes back even further to when we came out of Egypt. It goes further in the other direction, closer to our time, in events like the Six-Day War. The Six-Day War, you have to be a real disbeliever in God to credit only the Israeli army with what happened. The army deserves a tremendous amount of credit. The strategy and the planning and the execution were phenomenal. Our backs were to the wall or to the sea. And we had a stunning victory in 1967 with God's help. I believe you have to be blind not to see it. Furthermore, I believe that it is vital for us to thank God and thank the army, to thank God and thank Mordechai and Esther, to thank God and the Hashmonaim, to thank God and Moshe Rabbeinu and Yehoshua. Whatever generation and whatever fight there is, it is a partnership. I believe that's one of the strong messages of Purim. Let's move on for something else, also in Purim, and that is specific this year to Yerushalayim. In other years, it happens in the rest of the world and not here, and that's Purim on Friday. We have Purim on Friday more often than the rest of the world does, and what it requires is a juggling act to be able to celebrate Purim as well as prepare for Shabbat. So generally, overwhelming majority of people will have Seudat Purim in the morning when it's Friday, and often they'll go in the direction of bagels and lox or omelets rather than a meat meal. Some will have a meat meal in the morning. Some will wait until early afternoon to have their Seudat Purim, in line with the regular procedure when Purim is not on Friday. And there's even an unusual discussion in the halacha books of people who have their Seudah late in the afternoon, and it goes into Shabbos. I wrote about it because I found that it was a fascinating issue. I don't recommend it for anybody. I'm not going to do it myself. But it created some interesting situations. Picture this. Do not do this at home. Picture this. Seudat Purim, Friday, Purim, starts late afternoon. And then it's candlelighting time, so the women light candles and the meal continues. Now it is sunset. At sunset, you have to stop eating and you have to make kiddush. In order to make kiddush, you have to cover all of the challah and bread on the table and recite kiddush, except do not make a bore pri hagafen on the wine because you're in the middle of a meal during which you have drunk wine already. That's the assumption. And you have already made a bracha. So you do the Vayera Vayivoker Vayichulu Hashemayim passage, and then you go right into the Mekadesh HaShabbat without a Borei Pri HaGafen. Then, where in any other situation, you would get up and wash for Hamotzi. You don't wash because you're in the middle of a meal and you're already washed. So you bring Lechem Mishnah, double loaves for Shabbat. You cover them, and then you uncover them and distribute from the Lechem Mishnah, and everybody eats from it. No hamotzi, because you're in the middle of a meal. So that's kiddush without borei pri hagafen and hamotzi without the bracha hamotzi. Weird. Then you need to bring a special food additional in honor of Shabbat, in addition to whatever else you were enjoying during your Purim Seuda. And the meal has to extend at least until after stars out, and eating then also, so that it can in count as the first Seuda of Shabbat. Then comes Birkat HaMazon time. You have to say Retzei, because it's Shabbat, and you don't say Al HaNisim, because that clashes with Retzei, since Purim was Friday, not Shabbat. And Shabbat is Shabbat and not Purim. So Shabbat takes over, you say Retzei and not Al HaNisim. And after you're all finished with the Seuda and benching, then you daven Ma'ariv. I say, don't try this on your own. It's a weird situation, but I love those kind of weird situations because it gets you thinking about them, whether you do them or not. Let's use that song to make my next statement. La Yehudim Hayata Ora V'Simcha V'Sason V'Kor. That is a verse very familiar to everyone from Havdalah. Its source is Megillat Esther. The authors or editors of Havdalah chose it, among other psukim, to be said in introducing Havdalah. The actual Havdalah is the bracha on the wine and the spices and the candle and Havdalah. The psukim, the verses before, are introductory. And one of them is, La Yehudim Hayata Ora V'Simcha V'Sason V'Kor. The Jews had great joy and happiness. And then we add in Havdalah, Kein Tihye Lanu. So may it be with us. And that's part of the eternal quality of Purim. Purim is not to be viewed as a once upon a time, a long time ago event. Purim is an ongoing story of Jewish life. And if the hatred of Haman that hatched the plot to destroy the Jews did not meet with success, that's thanks to God and to the actions of Mordechai and Esther, but not at all to the credit of Haman, who attempted a final solution. Speaking of which, Hitler, Yimach Shemo, also desired to destroy every man, woman, and child, the nation of Mordechai, the Jewish people. He did not succeed, but he certainly did a tremendous amount of damage. Having 6 million or 7 million or 7.4, as some historians want to claim, of Jewish victims of the Shoah, of the Holocaust, you can't say that Hitler failed in his attempt. He had, unfortunately, a serious significant partial success. Haman did not. He failed miserably. But we look at them as the same because both had this irrational desire to destroy every man, woman, and child of the Jewish people. And that defines Amalek and its ilk. And we're not necessarily talking about biological descent of Amalek. We're talking about spiritual heirs of Amalek. When you hear the rhetoric from the leaders of Hezbollah or the leaders of Iran, modern Persia, you find that the goal to destroy the Jewish people is certainly not something from only our ancient history, but it is alive and well, sadly, in our time. And we need to be vigilant and we need to be prepared to deal with it. But that does not take away or change the fact that we celebrate Purim. Purim should be an inspiration to be able to handle well the situations that we are presented with today. Okay, I think we'll shut off the music, which I just did. I don't know. I have to listen to it myself, but I'm not going to do anything about it, how annoying it has been. I hope it's been somewhat joyful. And I want to transit into a little bit about Tzav, especially its Haftorah this week. Now, the fact of the matter is, we started Vayikra last week, which is heavily dealing with the topic of korbanot, offerings in the mikdash, in the sanctuary, in the temporary sanctuary known as the Mishkan, the tabernacles, and in the permanent structure in Yerushalayim known as the Beit HaMikdash, also called sometimes in English the Holy Temple. Korbanot, sacrifices, offerings, are a major theme in Vayikra, in Tzav, this week's Sedra, and in the beginning of Shemini, and in different places elsewhere in Vayikra. And I don't want to get too involved in the subject of sacrifices. Just a few points. There are animal sacrifices known as zivachim. There are offerings from the plant kingdom known as minachot. The elements of minachot include fine flour, olive oil, frankincense, which is a spice, and water. Different methods of preparation. And in the animal sacrifices, there were cow family, male and female, sheep family, male and female, and young in the animal, in the other one also, and goat family, he and she, and kid. Plus two types of birds, doves and turtle doves, two different types of that family of birds. I don't know. Store that for a moment. And now let me talk about the Haftorah. Not yet about it, but around it. Parshat Tzav turns out to be one of the most preempted Haftorahs that we have in the calendar. There's a regular Haftorah assigned to, that's a reading in the prophets assigned to any given sedra portion of the week. And then there are various special haftorahs which preempt, so that when Vayeshev has a regular haftorah, but when it happens to be Shabbos Chanukah, which it can be in two different situations. It could be Shabbos Chanukah by itself. It could be the first of two Shabbat Chanukah. Then we have a different Haftorah. Last week we read Parshat Vayikra and the special reading called Zachor. That preempted the regular Haftorah of Vayikra. Now let's get back to Tzav. Tzav has a regular Haftorah, which in a regular year, that's a 12-month year with one Adar, Tzav always, always is the Shabbat right before Pesach, making it Shabbat HaGadol, and Shabbat HaGadol has its own special Haftorah, which means in 12 out of every 19 years, the regular Haftorah of Tzav is preempted by Shabbat HaGadol's Haftorah. In Shana Me'uberet, that's the 13-month year with two Adars, Tzav can be Zohar, Tzav can be Pora, Tzav in Yerushalayim could be Purim. In all of those cases, the regular Haftorah gets preempted for the special reading of the special Shabbat. So the question is, when do we read the regular Haftorah of Tzav? Well, one answer is this coming Shabbat. But listen to the flow of years going backwards. This year, Tzav is alone. Going back a year at a time, we have Hagadol, Zohar, Hagadol, Hagadol, Zohar, Hagadol, Hagadol, Purim in Yerushalayim, Hagadol, Hagadol, Purim in Yerushalayim, Hagadol, Parshat Pora, Hagadol, Hagadol, Pora, Hagadol, Hagadol, Pora, Hagadol. And back 21 years ago, in the year 5755, 1995, 21 years ago, we had a situation in Yerushalayim like this Shabbat where we read the regular Haftorah of Tzav. It gets preempted on average 9 out of every 10 times. As you see by us not having read it in the last 21 years, that's because the year types are not distributed evenly throughout the year. But that's the story with Tzav. Now, that raised my curiosity, and I took a closer look at the Haftorah, which we read back in 1995, and we will read again in 2016, this year, in a couple of days. Before I say that, outside of Yerushalayim, there are more opportunities to read the regular Haftorah of Tzav. Whenever there's Purim on Shabbat in Yerushalayim, it's on Friday outside of Yerushalayim, and a regular Shabbat. So Tzav, Haftorah, is read more often outside of Yerushalayim, but I'm focusing on Yerushalayim because that's where I live. 21 years ago, we read it. So I took a look at this Haftorah that gets preempted year and year and year after year. And I found it absolutely devastating. Devastating to the Jewish people. God says through the Navi Yirmiyahu, you people think that I need animal sacrifices in a holy temple? When you do not behave properly, where you turn your back on me, where you betray me, where you think that just because there's a holy temple that everything is going to be forgiven, that temple will be destroyed. And that was a devastating message for the people. And it's a devastating message to this very day. That's the main message of the Haftorah. You read it and you feel like crying. Until we get to the last two verses of the Haftorah, which aren't even sequential with the rest of the Haftorah, They come from a chapter later, but they have a very uplifting message. That message has to do with who should boast. Not a wealthy person about his wealth, and not a strong person about his strength, and not even a wise person about his wisdom. The only goal of value is to get to know God better, to be faithful to God, to keep the Torah, to keep the mitzvot. The korbanot are supposed to bring you that direction, not be a replacement for it. That's the message of this rare Haftorah. We should heed it well. On that note, I wish you a happy Purim and a Shabbat Shalom. Lehishtameach.